This is the 9 with Ryan Pinder on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
905. Breaking news from the Sportsnet 960 World Control. Just a floor above our iconic studios powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Telecommunication. It's iconic. Find out more at iconicec.ca. We're subbing out. Hyunjin Ryu, get out of here. Mark Stone, come on in. We'll do a best of 6 till 7, and it will indeed be Game 6. Colorado's season on the line against Vegas, 7 o'clock right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. I don't know how that changes Kevin Woodley's evening, but he does join us every Thursday morning. Kev, big swing for you. We're now going to carry the game on the radio, so adjust accordingly.
I will. Do I live stream that from Vancouver then?
Yep.
I think I might catch that one on the tube. I think that might be one that you cancel a tee time for to watch. That's how good that one's going to be.
I don't disagree. I have really thoroughly enjoyed that series. I think you could probably safely call that the best of the second round series. It certainly hasn't been anything in the North Division when you're talking about entertaining series and had to rank them near the top at least. Has that been it for you, Vegas and Colorado, the appointment viewing more than any other?
Yeah, I thought Florida, Tampa in the first round just didn't last long enough, and then was disappointed by Tampa, Carolina in the second round. I think Carolina, some of the injuries caught up with them a little bit, and obviously goaltending just, one little mistake by Nedeljkovic, and then a rough night for Peter Mrazek, which is really interesting to see what's going to happen there. I mean, essentially you turn your crease over to a guy you put on waivers and expected to lose at the start of the season. Both Mrazek and Reimer unrestricted free agents this summer. And, a team that, for the most part has kind of tried to be the poster children for, or the poster child for, you don't need to spend or have elite goaltending to win, right? Like, you just build a great team and you can win. Struggled to pick the right guy. Ended up with the guy that at the beginning of the season they didn't even, they were willing to risk and expected to lose on waivers. And so that becomes a bit of an interesting focal point and conversation as that team moves forward. I expect it's Nedeljkovic, but the fact the way they arrived at it, sort of lends to that. Maybe this whole concept that you don't need to spend or don't need to worry about goaltending might be a little overstated, because the teams that were built to win without elite goaltending, Toronto, Carolina, are out sooner than I think they would have liked to be.
Yeah, and then it's just, there's a lot of random this time of year. You can't overreact either. I mean, geez, if you're the Flames, man, if you could upgrade on Cam Talbot and go get Jacob Markstrom, you got to do it. Well, one guy outperformed the other, and it's not like Markstrom was bad. It's just there is such an element of volatility at the position. So the takeaway this year is draft a goalie in the first round and pay him all the money. I don't know that was it last year or it will be next year. I mean, the Blues won a Stanley Cup with a guy that was in the minors heading into January.
And pay him all the money is going to be an interesting conversation, especially if we end up with a Stanley Cup final of, 10.5 Carey Price versus 9.5 Andre Vasilevsky, because that was the big question with Vasilevsky, right? Tampa wins it last year, but he was still on that bridge deal. He wasn't on his big money contract yet. He'd signed it, but it hadn't kicked in. Now the question became, could you get back there paying a guy 9.5 in goal? And right now, with some help from some salary cap gymnastics and obviously Kucherov's hip surgery, it looks like they're going to have a chance to do that. We talked about Carey Price last week a little bit, and the problem there is that as great as he's been in the playoffs, with all the money you're paying him, if he doesn't get better in the regular season, I'm not sure the Montreal Canadiens see the playoffs all that often. So for the rest of that contract, because he wasn't great in the regular season.
No,
so I don't know that shifts, but the one should be draft a goaltender, because take a look at the and it's not just the last few years. I don't have it. I did the rundown, and now I can't remember how far back you had to go. Like, you need to have your own guy to win. Like the teams that are winning are with goalies, whether they're paying them or not. It's with guys that are sort of homebred. There haven't been a lot of, let's airlift a guy in here and win a cup. It just hasn't happened in a long time. And maybe that is just an anomaly. But it's been one that's been happening for I want to say it's 2013. So that's a pretty good stretch where it's drafted and developed.
Even last year, though, Vasilevsky was the only homegrown guy. Like, Khudobin was the guy Dallas brought in, and that was after Bishop got hurt. That wasn't their plan. Grubauer is a guy that Colorado went out and gave picks up to get from another organization. The New York Islanders have been rotating guys in behind Barry Trotz. I mean, the takeaway last year wouldn't have been go draft a goalie, right? It would have been just go find a vet and get depth.
Yeah, and they get you there. I don't know what it is. So maybe the fact that so many of them get there, getting to that final four with that formula, maybe it doesn't matter that the guy that ultimately wins it for the past 8 or 9 years has always been somebody who came from within the system.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, there's a lot of ways to look at it, and I think we're always reminded this time of year how random this tournament could be. A Montreal Canadiens group that I don't think was good enough to get into the playoffs in three divisions. They got a red-hot netminder and have... You know, very
or
efficiently won 7 in a row.
Or do they? Okay, I'll give you Carey Price red hot in the first round. Winnipeg didn't get a sniff. And there's the one thing where I think Montreal is being a little undersold on, and Carey, frankly, in the second round at least, a little oversold on, is how good defensively they are. I talked about this going into the first round. Like, there was this defensive metric at Clearsight Analytics. Simple. It's just they measure... They weight it differently because of all the factors, but it's just 5-on-5 high-danger expected goals against. And for the past couple of years, that metric has been a real strong indicator of playoff success head-to-head. The team that was better in that regard during the regular season typically won the series. I think it was 28-30. A little more volatility in it in the first round this year. But one of the intriguing matchups that, you know, on paper looked so lopsided was, you know, Montreal and Toronto. They were both the top two teams in the playoffs in that statistic. And so... In that round, you needed Carey Price to get through. But you get to the second round, and Winnipeg's like 19th in that statistic, and Montreal is second. And that kind of played out more to the team identity and the Montreal's ability to defend than it was Carey Price standing on his head. Winnipeg had 7 high-danger chances in the final 3 games.
Jeez.
Combined.
Awful. That is just dreadful.
Combined. There was nothing. There were no... Both the goals in the final game in Game 4 were like nothing burgers. Those don't go in. Those shouldn't go in. They're long-distance, low-percentage goals. Carey Price shouldn't give them up. They're the first 2 low-percentage goals he's given up in the playoffs. And, you know... They just had nothing of quality at all against Montreal. And so I'm fascinated to see what happens in this next round. A lot of comments about how this is... You know, like it looks like a different sport that Colorado and Vegas is playing, and the pace and the speed. And it'll be interesting to see how much of that really is just that much better quality a team. Or does the way the Canadiens defend it, will they have an ability to slow that down? Not that anyone wants to see the game slowed down, but can they slow that pace down to with their defending, and how much will they have to lean on Carey Price? And I would suggest it's a good thing that Montreal finished Winnipeg off when they did, because the MO for Carey, as we've seen, has been as the games played go up, some of the performances dip. And so second half of back-to-back nights, and he lets in 2 long goals in Game 4. We saw even last year from round 1 to round 2, there was a drop-off. And I think this time off right now is going to be crucial in the next round, because I think you'd expect to need more of round 1 against Toronto Price than you needed against Winnipeg.
What's going to happen in Boston? Rask and Halak are up. We did see some of the young guys, younger 20s, in Vladich and Swayman, if I'm saying the former name properly.
Later.
And as you, as you had noted earlier, that is a market that has not given Rask the respect that you think he deserves. What's going to happen there, and how do you forecast their offseason, given that even though it's a second round, it is a disappointing exit?
Well, and then to me, the other part is, and what, you know, what do we make of what happened in that second round with Tuukka, who, you know, alluded several times to sort of being hurt, but not hurt enough that he couldn't play. And I was a little surprised that they didn't make a switch there. I'm not saying Tuukka was bad, but Tuukka wasn't Tuukka. Like, to me, the strength of when Tuukka Rask is on his game, and this isn't just like this is through a lot of years of sort of doing film work on him every year going into the playoffs and conversations with the goaltending coach over the years. When Tuukka's at his best, he's beaten plays on his skates. There's a sort of authoritative nature to his movements. Very crisp, clean, precise, and powerful. And when Tuukka has drifted or played poorly, he he's coming across on his knees. He's sliding a lot. He's down a lot. He's playing from his knees a lot. He's passive, would be one way of describing it. And that's the Tuukka I saw in the second round. The amount of plays where I would expect him to beat it on his skates and be set, square, and ready for a shot, and he's just sliding across deep in his net passively, was a lot higher than we're used to when he's at his best. And when you see it that consistently and you see him talk about not being 100%, like, to me, that's what it looks like. And so I'm a little surprised that they kept going with him if he wasn't at his best, especially with how well Swayman finished the season. And I do wonder what that means. Like, is that last shot? Is that the respect that he deserves as a future first ballot Hall of Famer? Like, hey, if this guy says he's good to go, we put him in there. I don't know what the answer is and whether that impacts his future. I mean, it makes all the sense in the world to bring him back. He didn't have his best season, but it's not like his best seasons are, you know, that far behind him. Like, I would say before this year, I know he left the playoff bubble, but last season and the playoff run and the season before that were like some of the best hockey I've ever seen Tuukka play. And again, it's that was just the way he was skating and moving and beating everything upright, which is such a key to today's game. You can't play on your knees as early or as often as you used to. So I think he's still capable of that level. And yet in that market, like, the way the fans react, like, can you bring him back after this? I'm not sure. I don't have the answers. But I do know it would be pretty risky to go from a tandem as established as Halak and Rask straight to the kids. We talked about this with Bobrovsky and Knight. As much as Bob's contract's a problem in Florida, having someone like him there as Knight transitions in, someone with experience, someone who has been a number one, is going to be important. I don't think Jeremy Swayman is ready to be thrown to the wolves after, you know, half a dozen starts at the end of a season, as good as they were, and in that market be like, hey, you're the number one guy. Let's learn some lessons on what happened with Carter Hart and recognize that even as excited as I was that Carter was going to be this next generation who can just come in and play, you probably need a support mechanism in place. And I can't think of a better one than a future first ballot Hall of Famer in Rask. I guess the question becomes, do they want him and what's it going to cost? Because I don't get the sense he wants to play anywhere else.
You had a note in there. Great news over the weekend for the Canadian men's squad of the World Championships. 0-3 start, and they pulled a rabbit out of their hat, win the tournament in dramatic fashion. Calgary's Andrew Mangiapane, Central, former Canuck Troy Stetcher, was great. It was a young, inexperienced crew, as many were at this year's tournament. But the GM that put it all together is, one of our favorites. The guy that I think we all finally understood once he went on Twitter and had the handle Strombone1.
Yeah, and, he's kind of starting. I know he's director of goaltending in Florida, but he's also like an assistant to the GM, and he's kind of starting to track on that, Steve Yzerman sort of path, like the ex-player that learns the ropes through different aspects of the front office, and this is his first chance to put, and a weird situation because obviously the pandemic and not your normal assortment of players for any nation, like you're not able to access
type, all that. Yeah.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, he came out with a gold medal. And I got to say, like, you know, he's been around the game. He understands the game. He thinks the game. But there's a different sort of mindset and skill set that he has in terms of, you know, understanding how all the chess pieces go together that go beyond the experiences of a goaltender. And this is going to sound really weird, but, like, I'm not surprised because he kicks everyone's ass at fantasy football every year in multiple leagues, like just dominates. I remember one year, like I've had my ass kicked by Roberto in fantasy football, like for five straight years now. And it's just, I mean, I'm not that good at it anyway. So it's not like that's a feather in his cap. But one year when he was still playing, I think he was in 13 leagues, he told us. And he won something like 9 of them. You can laugh that off as just fantasy football, but if you've played it, you know, like there's a certain sort of looking ahead and thought process and analytical mind, or just, you know, there's a different approach. You have to be able to think a different way. And maybe I'm just not that bright and I'm not good at it and I'm making much more of this than needs to be made. But Roberto just sort of understands that. Like he's always been a guy that is able to sort of process things in that way. And I think that, you look at the success he's had with the World Championships this year and some of the other stories you're hearing about his work in Florida. And, yeah, it's just, to me, he's on that path that, you know, ex-players like Eisenman have sort of followed.
One of the stories we've been following throughout the year has been in the craziest hockey market on earth. Not the biggest fishbowl, not the most difficult to play in, but the craziest for sure. That's where you are, in Vancouver, where the head coach worked all year without an extension that we were told wasn't going to happen and then finally got done, where the GM got a vote of confidence last year and then blundered through last offseason, not re-upping Tyler Toffoli, committing to the likes of, you know, Jake Virtanen, amongst others, where there's been a lot of talk about ownership, seeking opinions from others, or the Sedins they've been flirting with may have roles moving forward, and where the goalie coach, who's considered to be one of the best in the business, had a big ask for the club and wanted some security and wasn't going to get it. He just got his deal. All of a sudden, the Canucks have ticked off a lot of the boxes we thought they wouldn't.
Yeah, and 5-year deal for Ian Clarke is reported this morning or last night. I think it was Patrick Johnson and David Quadrelli sort of had the terms locked up first. I knew it was going to be longer term, didn't know the exact terms. And director of goaltending title. So goaltending coach and director of goaltending for Ian Clarke. And you know what? A departure for this team. I didn't think it was going to get done, Ryan, only because it would involve such a departure, like in terms of being progressive. That is not something this team is, this current management group is known for. It's something this team was known for back in the, you know, the heydays of Mike Gillis, you know, leading new charges, but it just hasn't been the case here for a while. And so knowing that the ask was that big or that long, and knowing that they were only going 2 years on the head coach, I just couldn't see it. Or that Jim Benning, the GM, only has 2 years. Like, I didn't see this as a management group and organization that was going to give the goaltending coach term, dollar, and title beyond what everybody else was getting. And so pleasantly surprised. Like personally, this is great. I get to watch him work for the next 5 years in person, and he is one of the best. But didn't expect them to take this step. I'm not sure they had much of a choice. It would have been a public relations nightmare to let him walk.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the price you pay for not taking care of things in advance, for not negotiating with people when they want you to negotiate with them. You're left against a wall. But credit to ownership and management for stepping up and going outside the box and, you know, signing this deal. I don't know how much choice they had after Thatcher Demko pretty much pleaded publicly.
Never hear that. Yeah.
Never see that. I've had messages from goalie coaches all around the league about how unique that is. And so, you know, maybe that was what tipped it. I didn't expect it, but I'm happy to see it happen. And as much as there will be a lot of people, like you said, they got all those things done. They checked all those boxes. I still think there is something that needs to be noted about the way it happened, the timing of how it happened, and the added stress. And some of them will just blame us in the media. And hey, on the Ian Clarke file, I'm first and foremost. I thought they'd blown this way back in March. But the way things get done, to me, still isn't how you'd ultimately want to see an organization run. Like, you shouldn't have this much stress and this much volatility around your key people. You shouldn't have to be, you know, down to the final weeks of their contract before you extend them and get it done and get it taken care of. You shouldn't have to feel like you have a gun to your head because you didn't take care of it in a timely manner. And to me, those are all still fair criticisms of this organization. But at the end of the day, at least on these fronts, they stepped up and got things done. And they added a new voice. That's the other thing. As much as I focus on the goalie coaching, a coach that Ian worked with in Columbus, Brad Shaw, comes in to run the defense and help with the defense. Crucial for this organization.
Yep.
31st in the NHL when it came to all the defensive metrics I have from ClearSight Analytics. Dead last. Players like Quinn Hughes, as great as they were offensively talented, there were habits there defensively, went outside the system in his own end, chased one-on-one when they're supposed to be playing a zone, did not engage, just waved sticks at puck battles along the wall, rolled off them rather than engaging in them. There are a lot of habits there, and he had a bad year, like by his standards. And there's a lot of habits there that need to change and need to be coached. And in Bradshaw, they have someone who I believe not only comes in with a history having done it with Seth Jones and with Pietrangelo in St. Louis before that, but comes in with a new voice, and you know that brings you some sort of some authority on the measure. Clearly, at this point, if those things weren't being addressed on a regular basis, it would have been hard for the people that were coming back to all of a sudden change their tune on it. So I think that's going to be a really important hire for this team.
It'll be Grubauer and Fleury tonight. Enjoy it. That won't be boring. The hockey itself has been great. The goaltending's been spectacular. Have fun. We'll catch up next week.
Sounds good, Ryan. Thanks.
Kevin Woodley, In Goal Magazine, joining us every Thursday, 9:05 on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. How about this? Dine In is back. Also, of course, takeout, delivery. You can find them on the apps that bring them to your house. Whatever works for you. Pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs. All that, and of course, the legendary, find them at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Don't make your decision now. Look at the menu. Do your thing there. Why not? Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar, 403-248-3344. We will come back with, a quick look at tonight's Blue Jays game, the Pinder Report. And, oh, yeah, that is a pretty monstrous game six for the Avs, who all of a sudden, I mean, the window's not closing, but is this their best chance to win a Stanley Cup? They got to win tonight. Sportsnet 960, The Fan. 929, welcome back. Huge game on your radio tonight. Breaking news. The Rocket has pivoted. We will not take the rubber mats from the Windy City at Guaranteed Rate Field. No Hyunjin Ryu on your radio. Instead, hopefully Nathan McKinnon scoring some goals. We get that, we probably get a Game 7. It is Game 6 from T-Mobile, that madhouse in Vegas, where they'll be wound up. As from the fourth year of the expansion franchise's history, they have an opportunity to go to the Final Four for, Riley, get this, a third time.
It's ridiculous.
How? And you go look at the roster when they finish the expansion draft, and you're like, yeah, I thought they'd do better. I really thought they'd mark my thought, huh? Okay, I guess. Fleury had a goals against over 3 the year prior. Save percentage like under 900. Jeez, what's left there? I don't know, man. Well, Marchessault might be a thing. And okay, Riley Smith, maybe that's not bad. I like that. Alex Tuck, maybe he's a player one day. Don't mind the Eric Halla. But like, where's the talent? And then William Karlsson scores like 40 goals. They get to the final in year one. They bow out to Alex Ovechkin. We know about the Iginla shift, right, against Vancouver in 04. The real greatest shift in hockey history was Alex Ovechkin with the cup in Washington in the fountains and then back to Moscow and basically all summer. That's the greatest shift in hockey history. That was beating Vegas in the final. They get upset by San Jose in the wild first round. Remember the five-minute major penalty that San Jose scored on three times? That's in their history already. Last year, they lose to Dallas, I believe, in round 3. They got past Vancouver, who won in round 1. And, so here they are. A chance in their third year, in their fourth year to be in the Final Four for the third time. And really, if not for a five-minute major call in Game 7, maybe could be running the table here 4-for-4 in the Final Four. That is just insane. And for the Avs, boy, we love that roster. Boy, you want almost all those players on your team. You love them. Now, Kadri, that sucks. His fault, his track record, it's what he does. He got suspended. 8 games. He could be back for a Game 7, but you need to win Game 6 to get Game 7. And all of a sudden you look at this roster and you're like, well, they better get it done because it gets harder from here, not easier. Sure, young guys are going to get better. I get that. But you will not be able to keep everyone. What is Gabriel Landeskog worth? How much of a pay cut is he willing to take? Your highest scoring player this playoffs is Brandon Saad. He's gone. It's time for significant raises for some good young players. Cale Makar might add a zero to his salary. Can you imagine that, Riley? Just adding a zero behind your salary?
I would do it.
I can't believe it. $10 million? That'd be crazy for you. Wow. Cale Makar is making $880,000. I don't think it's crazy at all to think he could find a way to get between $8 and $9 million a year. Now, there's different ways to do things. You could bridge him. You could try to keep that number lower. You've also got to extend McKinnon in 2 years. Burakovsky and Kadri have one more year left. Nichushkin's got 1 year left. Timmins needs a deal. Like, all of a sudden, there's a lot of guys you got to pay here. And I'm not saying they haven't done a great job. They have. But they will not be able to keep everyone. They're too talented. Guys need raises when they're good. Tyson Jost needs a deal. He's not going to play for less than 900 grand next year. He just isn't. Sorry. Better win tonight. Better win tonight. And I really like Jared Bednar. I thought he displayed class and what's the right word? When the Flames played the Avalanche in 2019, one coach came across as petulant and really, really thrown off, and the other was incredibly classy. And it's easy to figure out who was who because of who won and lost, but there also was just a guy that was comfy in that environment and one guy that was frazzled. And remember, that was Bill Peters' first playoff series as a head coach in the NHL. Might be his last. But for Bednar, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he's on the hot seat if they don't get through here. And I think the organization's probably smart enough not to get rid of him. And they are a team that's done everything the right way. When you look at how they dealt with Matt Duchene when he wanted out, when you look at how they've drafted and developed, how they've built their team. But don't think there isn't massive pressure on that group. It's not the same as Toronto, but no one thought the second round would be the ticket for the President's Trophy winners. Like, oh, well, they get the second round. We're good. See you next year, guys. I'm renewing. Get her done tonight, boys. And by the way, Riley, if we get a game seven, Friday night game, that pop some corn, crack a few brews, that'll work.
Yeah, I'd be all right with that.
Although I guess that would be Saturday, wouldn't it? I'm off by a day.
Oh, yeah.
Tomorrow, that would have been Islanders Bruins. Okay, we'll take a hockey night in Canada Saturday night here. Fine. We'll do what we have to do. Well, that'd be good. Like that. So that's the one tonight on your radio. It'll be fun. And if they get Kadri back and there is a Game 7 and they're going back to that building they've lost once at since March 27th, I really like the Avs. But they have to survive a storm tonight. Vegas at home has been sensational. That building is going to be bonkers. And even if you're up 2-0 through 40 minutes, you ain't out of it. You have not packed up the points. Do not go head into the locker room early. Vegas proved that in Game 5. We'll take a break and come back with the Pinder Report. A little preview of the Jays tonight and some other news from the world of sports. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The 9 with Ryan Pinder continues on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Welcome back. Final 20 minutes or so of the hour. We'll send you to Rintoul and Sermon following the Pinder Report. Also a reminder, we did pull the old switcheroo. It's a good move, Riley, if you have a chance to do it. You take Hyunjin Ryu and the Jays, toss them aside, and fire in a game from T-Mobile where the Vegas Golden Knights can punch their ticket to the Final Four. I feel like it's a really nice audible at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah,
good options
right
to have.
Decision.
Probably the right decision, and you're going to let Kirsch keep his job now, right? Because I know you were calling for his head before.
Yeah, he can have it.
News of the day. Let's get there. Pinder Report.
Ryan Pinder.
Ryan Pinder.
Ryan Pinder.
Okay, I'll take a B+, but I need a little context here. Are we talking about a hard marker? Is this like, you know, pass-fail situation where everyone else in the class has A's? Like, what a normal day, what's the grade? Or is it just way too varied?
You've got some A's, for sure. I just said because there wasn't, you know, there's only one game. There's, you know, the Jays won. Jays, typical stuff. And, you know, B+.
I don't even know if he's read the thing, Dean. He's just talking about last night in sports.
No, I'll ask him in the 5:30.
How stout is it? I know.
Well, there was a time when, I mean, guys were very excited. They couldn't wait to be the producer and run the Pinder Report because it was funny and clips. And he even Riley would say, I giggled out loud. I had a tee-hee and even a guffaw today.
Mm-hmm.
But today I asked him how it's going, and he said, you know, and then he gave it a B+.
Do some good stuff in the NBA portion.
Which is kind of a passing grade. He said that we've got a double rainbow guy, and there's some other things in there. But
it's better at the end than the beginning.
But then Riley definitely said near the end that you maybe are relying too much now on the interns, and that you need to, his words, not mine, step your bleeping game up. End
quote.
That's
what Riley said, hey?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dear. No, I think it's pretty good.
He said you are mailing it in.
Oh, good.
That you've gotten fat and lazy is what he said.
Tomorrow's Friday morning, so we'll see what a mailed-in version looks like then, Riley. We'll be going to our insider, Riley Pollock, at every turn. So, Riley, who do you like in the women's Final Four at the French Open? How do you pronounce that? Nope. Hey, Dean. One vacancy in the NHL's Final Four remaining. Another bullpen meltdown in Chicago, but was it the Pale Hose or the Blue Birds? Final Four at the French, and it should be Canadian Open weekend in the PGA, but stupid pandemic. Let's start with the NHL, shall we?
Oh, I'm not ready.
Oh.
Oh, dear. See? Bad start.
Is this going to hurt my grade?
Oh, no.
Jeez.
Here we
That's not
Is that
it.
The clip you wanted?
No, it's not.
No?
You know what we need.
That's not the right one either.
No, it's not.
Not only is he on fire, you cannot put a fire extinguisher to that man.
Oh, this is Can't embarrassing now. I feel terrible about this.
One more try.
We made the decision with Peter Chiarelli after the second period.
Nope, that's not it either.
Something in the water in Edmonton.
There it is.
Ah! Right.
B minus, Riley? How
it was
doing?
Under the placemat. Why didn't I look there? All right. Bruins Islanders at Nassau, game 6. Chance for the Owls to move on. And that place was jumping early.
Right point to Dobson and Bruin Ice. Put it on goal. Big save. St. Jacobina. He scores! Travis St. Jack has his first of the playoffs for the Islanders. And it gives New York the 1-0 lead just shy of 9 minutes in.
Yep, and we're using high pitch nervous kid, not the TV call. C minus.
Oof.
It's a clinching game. We needed the excitement.
We'll see how it goes. Isles would take back-to-back penalties after that opener, and these fans are just the best, Dean. Oh, my goodness. Yep. They're chanting New York Saints. Suck on that one, Cassidy.
So good.
The Bruins would take advantage, though, on one of those two power plays that overlapped.
Krejci the hold after the dump out. Pastrnak goes right circle, one-timer. They score! Power play goal for the Bruins, and they have tied this game at 1.
So he has the capability of not being high-pitched.
Yeah, that sounded like a different human. Gotta be honest. You're right, though. That wasn't bad when the Islanders score. Oh, well, here it is. Second period, a good one for the home team.
Here's a break for Nelson. In alone, shoots. He scores! Oh, Nelly! Brock's got another! Gave it away to Bailey in front for Beauvillier, and Nelson Brock shoots and scores! Nelson has his second of the period! Off the spoke B on the jersey of Tuukka Rask, and then knocked in by Kyle Palmieri! Oh, Palmieri's got another! His team leading seventh of the playoffs! It's a 3-goal second period for the Islanders, and Kyle is fired up! He has made it 4-1 New York as he gets the crowd going!
Is that what that noise was? The crowd was going?
That's what it was.
I hadn't noticed last night.
See, here's the thing. Like, his call isn't bad, but then his descriptor, it's like he needs to go and see if swimmers get that checked out.
Yeah, it's like someone's got his plums in a vise.
Yeah, that's right.
The Isles score, they just give that thing a spin. Anyway, it was a lot of Islanders and not much. The Boston Bruins threw 40, and that didn't really change in the third period. Two more from the Isles. They're moving on, Dean. The Isles are moving on.
Wow. Let's hold it in behind the New York net with 3. Richie on it. Oh, it's out. And the New York Islanders defeat the Boston Bruins by the final score of 6-2. The series is over. They eliminate Boston in 6, and they will head to the Stanley Cup semifinals for a second straight year.
Oh, to be there last night, my goodness. Dean, I'd give you my left front tire.
That's right. Well, I could use that, yeah. I don't know why I feel it, because it's... Maybe it's because they had their team kind of taken away from them.
Yeah,
and that,
totally.
Because it was never really about the fan base. I mean, I know the crowds weren't huge, but still. Now they're back. The team's good. Brand
they
new barn coming.
They sucked for a long time, man. They sucked.
Well, there again, you talk about people that have lived their life and not seen certain things.
Yeah.
You've not seen a good Islanders team. Yet they had won 4 straight cups. Dynasty.
Yep.
I mean, a true dynasty team. And then it was just a steady diet of Brian Berard and Rick DiPietro and Mike Milbury and Tommy Soderstrom. Gross.
Chris, what is this? No, Garth Snow
Garth
on the
Snow.
Team. There was some big swing and misses there. He gave the DiPietro deal. They chanted, "We want Tampa for a minute and a half." Just phenomenal stuff. It really is. What a building.
Wow!
Woo! NHL News. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Double
yeah.
rainbow guy.
Yeah, he's very excited. Mark Scheifele met with the media yesterday, Dean. I really think he's a great hockey player, and I think he's also really confused about what's happened in the last week.
Obviously, it's crushing to you know that my season was ended by that, and I wasn't able to play in this series. You know, I thought I was going to be tried to shut down by Philip Deneau, and you know, it was Department of Player Safety that shut me down. So that definitely sucks. You know, you guys, the media, you know, had us not making the playoffs, being a bottom feeder in the league. So
it's our fault, Dean.
You know, that's where, you know, you guys get caught, you know, contradicting your guys' selves all the time.
Yeah.
So
it's on us.
You know, you guys didn't have any hope for this team, from day one. And I think we proved you guys wrong all season long.
Yeah. You know what he proved everyone wrong is when almost everyone picked them to beat the Habs and they got throttled. That's where they proved everyone wrong.
You know what that was?
Not sure about the rest of that.
For Mark Scheifele, that was a bad look.
That's some venting?
It's a bad take.
Fine.
Yeah.
It is a bad take, but I get it.
And Elliot was talking about it. It's kind of surprising coming from him because he usually, like, he doesn't curse. Like, he's a very mild-mannered boy.
Mine's
so then to come out and
too.
Play
like
the woe-is-me card. Remember, last year, playing round, got his leg clipped by Tkachuk, didn't play again. This year, game one of round two, gets suspended, doesn't play again. So he's probably a little sour. But...
I get it, man. That's that they're pissed, and it's always easy to point fingers when you're pissed off. Now that said, I do think they bested expectations to get to round two. I thought that was a very well organized team for the lack of assets they have at certain parts of the roster. Sugar playing in the top four all year, but safe to say, that's a team that needs Mark Scheifele on the ice in the playoffs, not eating popcorn or you know. Gimped up in a hotel or in a hospital bed, right?
Weird take.
Weird take.
Still, again, excuse me. It's good to be frustrated and to be cheesed, I guess. But to be mad at Ken Weeb or whoever on the Zoom call.
You picked the Habs in 7. How dare you?
None of you guys. I mean, you guys contradict yourself all the time, Mark. Just you're not good at this.
Yeah, Mark, you're digging.
Yeah,
dig up, stupid.
That's
the one. Tonight, NHL. Whoa, big one on tap. Colorado at Vegas, game 6. Oh,
Vegas, baby, Vegas!
Habs have not got past the second round since 0-2. Wow. We talk about model franchises. Oh, look at Colorado. Jeez, what did Colorado? How did Colorado do it? Joe Sakic. Oh, who's the assistant GM? Bring him here. What's going on? Oh, Joe. Have another second round since 0-2.
Well, yeah, that's another team that...
Was Pete Forsberg there still? That's a while ago.
When you step back and take a look at it, that's the Corey... Remember the Corey Sarich years, the Jerome Iginla years. Not great. Not great, Bob.
That's pre-Jerome, no? Jerome's, like, still not even gone to the final.
Well, I'm just...
Oh, I see. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. See what you're saying now.
Keep up, would you?
Just trying my hardest here. So here's what we know about tonight's game. Well, Abs, it's your window. We know we talked about it a little earlier today. Grubauer and Landeskog, they're both free agents this summer. Kale Makar is going to go from a crisp $880 a year to, well, add a zero and then probably a little more too. Because if there's a defenseman that can make a case for an $80 million 8-year deal, it's probably Cale Makar. No?
He can make the case. I don't know what that... I don't know what that looks like because every player is so different. Do you want to take a shorter-term deal and have faith that in 3 or 4 years, when, what, for him, when you're 25 or 26,
yeah,
that you're still, more. You're already a Norris Trophy candidate?
Oh, yeah. And I actually don't think that's, I think you're right. I think the bridge is probably a very reasonable place to end up because they do have to get McKinnon on a new deal. It buys them a little more time. It's what Tampa's been doing with their young kids. But also from Makar's perspective, like if the cap's going up, up, up,
well, that's
in
what
four
I mean,
or five
yeah.
years, like go ahead and take your 3-4 years. And then as things grow, maybe you're a $15 million player. And it's like, geez, that was, yeah.
Because even on a bridge, what are we talking, 5, 6?
I'd go 7 or 8. That seems to be sort of the,
you know what I mean?
Chuck's bridge.
That's decent dough to hold
Braden
you over
points,
it.
Deal. Those would be ones I'd compare it to, yeah.
Until you get your slam dunk deal.
Mm-hmm.
Not bad. Good job, Cale. Good kid.
Now, we mentioned the Avs not getting past second round since 2002. The Golden Knights have been in the league, what, this 3 full seasons? This is their 4th? They've done it twice, so this could be their 3rd with a win tonight. They make it look easy, Dean, very easy. If the Avs could force Game 7, they would get Nazem Kadri back, who we have not talked about, but a guy that they could use given that, well, they were supposed to be dominant down the middle against this Vegas team. Someone that can skate, someone that can play physically, someone that can score. Could they have one more goal and one more win if Kadri was in this whole series? Wouldn't be crazy to suggest that. 8-game suspension was upheld and then upheld again by a second appeal.
We both have the Avalanche winning this series. You had Avs in 5. I have them in 6.
Can just they, win it. Let's go, boys.
Can they win it in 7?
Just win tonight. I mean, I don't even think, like, don't ask for 2. Just get a win in that building. That, you know, that looks really hard right now.
They were really good the other night. Like, they're down,
they
and now yeah. there's question marks, but they were really good.
They should have won Game 5. Now, I also thought Vegas should have won Game 2, so.
Because that's the other thing. Vegas probably has room to be better than they were last game, and they won mm-hmm. on the road. Now they're at home.
That building is going to be jumping tonight.
Unreal. Just absolutely unreal, which is why I think Vegas probably closes it out.
Do you want to pull the lever and switch to that baseball game for hockey? So I'm doing tough.
I don't know what we're thinking. It's an elimination game. Two of the what are we? Jays, White Sox. We've had 2 of those in the last 2 days.
Yeah, it's like, oh boy, which bullpen's going to blow up here in game 71 of 162?
It's the Jays' turn if that's how it's going. But still.
I don't know that it works that way. But it is if they're alternating, it is their turn. Speaking of the Jays, they were in action. Yes, they were. Game 2 of 3 in the Windy City last night. Toronto trying to bounce back from that disastrous meltdown on Tuesday in the opener. Another great starter battle. First, it was Robbie Ray, Carlos Rodon 2 nights ago in Game 1. Last night, rookie Alec Manoah against Lance Lynn. Lance Lynn is fooling him, man. He's the new Mark Burley. Have you seen him? Got the big boiler going. He's still zipping the ball in there.
Well, that's why I couldn't believe it. I said yesterday.
The numbers are insane.
He's had an unreal year for a guy who's been around forever and doesn't look like anything you'd expect to be an ace on the mound.
Journeyman, right? Wily vet. That's what you'd call him. Well, there he is with like a 1.2 something ERA a third of the way through the season. What? Both were great. Lynn, 7 innings, just 4 hits allowed, struck out 9.
And his name is Lance.
Like his last name's Lynn.
Nothing about that should be intimidating. You should not be scared or fearful of someone who is named Lance.
If you owned a buffet, that's the only thing that should scare you about the guy. I mean, he's a unit right
that's
now.
That's shaming.
Doesn't
that's
seem not... to matter. No.
We all enjoy a good buffet, especially coming out of a pandemic. I can't wait.
Manoah, just 2 runs, only 1 of them earned through 5 innings. 4 Ks, 4 hits. Good, not great, and certainly much better than his second start against Miami. Let's pick things up. Top of 8. Jays are down 2-1. It's getting late, and the Sox bullpen had just taken the ball from Lynn. 1 out, Riley Adams reaches on a 3rd strike wild pitch. Heads up play. Get running. Then Simeon Bichette single. The base is loaded for Vladito.
Here it comes. Down and in, ball 4 to force in a run and tie the game as Adams crosses the plate.
All right, so Vladdy ties up the game with a walk. That he almost bat flipped the walk. That's pretty impressive.
He did, yeah.
Yeah. That forced a pitching change. Teoscar Hernandez worked a 3-0 count. He's obviously going to take it with the new pitcher and take another walk, right?
The 3-0 on the way, and he swung at it and hit a ground ball to second, and then an errant throw as the Blue Jays catch another huge break, and two runs are going to score on the play.
That made it 4-2. Boy, that's dumb on a lot of
fronts. That was also, you know,
swinging at 3-0, and then also the throw from the second baseman on the turn.
That play was the baseball gods giving some back to the Jays. We know your bullpen's been crushed and all that. Hernandez is going to swing at an awful pitch on
ball four. He's swinging at
ball four, like with a bullet, and I don't know what Anderson. Now again, if you watch the replay, because there were some guys saying, "Look, he'd have been safe anyway, even if the throw isn't way over Abreu's head." But still, just an awful, awful choice, and it ends up in an error, and they score two on it.
Yeah, and they'd make more mistakes in the ninth, and your adult son looking a little better of late. Dean, look at this.
And Tellez with a liner into right for a base hit. Espinal is getting the wave, heading home and will score. And an errant throw will allow Tellez to go to second. It is 5-2 Blue Jays.
They'd add another. Jays bullpen would redeem themselves. Four innings of work, no earned runs, no hits, just two walks. They nail it down, 6-2 the final. Bo Bichette, 3-for-5, good night for him. Jays back to three games over 500. 6-10 first pitch in Chicago for the rubber match tonight. It's on Sportsnet 1 and may even be on your radio, Dean.
Don't miss it.
Yeah, Hyunjin Ryu and his 3.23 ERA against Dallas Keuchel, the man with the world's craziest looking beard. And it's 4.25 ERA. It's a weird beard.
It's very shaped.
Yeah, it's
hiding
like
something.
Jutting out. It definitely looks like a compartment covered with fake beard. Like, what are you smuggling in there, bud?
Yeah, there's something in there.
Is that where he's got the sticky stuff to
you
grip the ball?
You put your weed in there.
There you go, yeah. Jay's batters have hit Keuchel pretty well. The lineup that you can put forth today has hit Keuchel 320 over their career. Not bad, not bad at all. NBA playoffs, let's go.
Boom shakalaka!
Suns beat the Nuggets 123-98 to take a 2-0 series lead into Denver. Did you hear the Nuggets head coach? Just like, oh yeah, if we play like that, we're done. We're not going to win at home. Just not even close. We didn't have any answers. Like, oh boy, that's some honesty there. Chris Paul and his bad shoulder continue to do work. Dino, 17 points, 15 helpers, not a single turnover. See, Rhett's got a bad shoulder, but he'd have way more turnovers.
Now,
than
was
probably
he the,
not as many points.
Was he the one that fought Mayweather on the weekend?
That's a different one.
Oh.
Yeah, that guy was a Richard. This guy's not.
Okay.
Tonight, an NBA doubleheader on Sportsnet 360. 5:30, game three between the Nets and the Bucks.
Actually, it's pronounced Milwaukee, which is Algonquin for the good land.
Mm-hmm. It's in Wisconsin, Dean, that new building there.
Wisco.
Very proud of myself, yeah. Milwaukee, sneaky good place. You can find dollar bottled beer in Wisconsin.
What was that shirt you had?
Drink Wisconsinably.
Right.
Nets lead that series 2-0. No James Harden tonight. At 8 o'clock, it's the second half of the doubleheader. Clippers and Jazz. Clippers and Jazz. That sounds like a cool barbershop, Dean, doesn't it? Hey, Clippers, Jazz, right? Yeah. Thanks, Kawhi.
Oh, my God.
French Open, Final Four set on clay. It'll be Nadal and Djokovic, Zverev and Tsitsipas in the men's side. Those start at, I think, 3 a.m. tomorrow morning. What's going on there? Mm-hmm. Women's bracket has been just upsets all over. No one in the top 16 has made it to the Final Four. We have a 17 seed, a 31 seed, and two unseeded players.
Who are these people?
I don't know. PGA, the Palmetto Championship at Congaree. Boy, that sounds like some sort of a croquet tournament, doesn't it? Palmetto Championship at Congaree.
Oh, my God.
Wasn't the Palmetto, wasn't that one of those Tim the Booze guy's drinks with the grapefruit and the tequila? Mm.
B+.
Delicious.
Just teetering on the edge of a B+. Here.
Should be RBC Canadian Open week, but yeah, you know, it's in Canada, so. Mm.
What the f***?
Deesh.
Brooks and Bryson, the feature combatants this week. Most of the other big names are taking the week off with the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines next week. And both played very nicely in the media yesterday. I don't like that, guys. It's a rivalry. Say something nasty. Let's go. Canadians include David Hearn, Nick Taylor, Michael Gligic, and Roger Sloan. So it's the B side of the, you know, nearly double-digit Canadians that are regulars on tour. And some good names in this tournament, Dean, if you're looking for people that have done well the day they were born and their parents gave them a handle. I'll be cheering for Smiley Kaufman for this weekend.
Right.
There's also an amateur named Cole Hammer. I'm serious.
Well, in fairness, I don't think his parents had any choice in that.
That's true.
If you're a hammer.
Smiley was the parent. Yeah.
If you're a hammer, you're just a hammer.
What a handle. That's your Pinder Report.
The Pinder Report, brought to you by Motorworks. Bring in your BMW for the best repairs and service in the city and the best price. They'll beat any competitor on 51st Ave and 3rd Street Southeast.
He still has a pretty big hammer